WILL's annual vintage vinyl sale for the Illinois Radio Reader is coming up on May 17th. That means it's time to donate your used records, CDs, DVDs, and working stereo equipment. Call Dean Geiken at 217-333-6503 for more information.
This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On the day after, America continues to argue the issues and the candidates. Delegates and, in some places, votes are still being tallied. Five campaigns scramble for the next set of states and for fresh infusions of money. Consensus, not always the best guide this year, suggests that Senator John McCain accomplished much, if not everything, he hoped for yesterday, that Governor Mitt Romney faces difficulties, not the least of which is his failure to break away from a dogged Governor Mike Huckabee. On the Democratic side, Senators Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama both emerged with important victories and both appear set to sustain the struggle. And the record numbers who voted yesterday confirm unprecedented levels of interest and passion. In this hour, we'll look back at what happened yesterday, at who won, who lost, and why. And we want to hear from those of you who participated. If you voted, caucused, or worked the election, call us. Describe what it looked and felt like and what other voters were saying and doing. We have two phone lines for you today, one for Republicans and one for Democrats. If you're an independent, you can call either line. The Republican line, 800-344-3893. Again, that's 800-344-3893 for Republicans and Independents. The number for Democrats and Independents, 800-344-3864. Again, 800-344-3864. And everybody can send us email. That address is talk@npr.org. With us on Little Sleep But Lots of Energy is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. His Political Junkie column appears weekly on NPR's website. Ken, nice to have you with us today.
That's a matter of speaking. I think I am with you today, yes.
And let's begin with unfinished business from last night, which includes the Democratic primaries in Missouri and in New Mexico.
Well, both are obviously very close. Barack Obama has a lead in both. We perhaps may be pretty close to calling Missouri for Barack Obama. We had called it earlier for Hillary Clinton, but there was a Obama surge late last night, and then it went too close to call, and we went to sleep not knowing who would win. Many networks had already called Missouri for Obama. It looks like Obama may win the state of Missouri, which would be a big pickup for him. New Mexico, very, very close. The last I saw was a couple of hundred votes with an Obama lead, too close to call, but also interesting because Andy Kohut, who's here, will talk about the demographics and everything and how the Latino vote in California was overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton over Barack Obama. But in heavily Hispanic New Mexico, almost a dead even state at this point.
So it's going to be a complicated analysis. Again, we'll be talking with pollster Andy Kohut in a couple of minutes. But have the Democrats finished apportioning their delegates?
No, there is still, you know, we're a lot of, if you look at a lot of the states, I mean, first of all, it's very interesting. Hillary Clinton, it's really a draw of what happened yesterday. Obviously, I would think that going into Super Tuesday, perhaps a month ago, we would have thought that this would be Hillary Clinton country. We see that in a lot of states where you have an opportunity to see the candidates up close, Barack Obama does far better than the national reputation of Hillary Clinton, which many thought would help her carry the day in Super Tuesday states. But it was very, very close yesterday. You know, Barack Obama may have won 13 states to compare to Hillary Clinton's 8 states. But at the same time, Hillary Clinton won the big ones. She won California. She won New York. She won New Jersey. And not close. It was pretty, you know, convincingly. And I don't know about a delegate count, but in the popular vote, she did very, very well. So obviously, both candidates on the Democratic side can certainly claim victory. And maybe for us political junkies, we are happy that the Democratic race goes on. Some Democratic strategists may not be so happy because they would love a nice, tidy uniting of the Democratic Party and then face the general election as a united party.
On the Republican side, by the delegate count on NPR.com, I see John McCain. That John McCain is already more than halfway home.
He's pretty close to that, absolutely. And it was a very good night for John McCain. Not a great night. And the reason I say that is that because all along we thought that Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney would be fighting over social conservative votes, and that would be to the benefit of John McCain. And for the most part, that was true. We saw that in South Carolina, for example. A lot of people thought that Mitt Romney would have Mike Huckabee would have won, but Fred Thompson, Mitt Romney, and others took away conservative votes from him. But Mike Huckabee did very well for himself yesterday, especially winning the southern states, the Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, and as well as West Virginia, some other states. And that was big for him. A lot of us thought that the Romney and Huckabee would split it, enabling McCain to have a sweep of the South. Huckabee obviously shows that he still has staying power. He's very strong with evangelical voters, as we saw in South Carolina and especially Iowa, which he won. But the race is not over. But clearly, if there is a Republican front runner, and there is, it is John McCain. He didn't put away his rivals yesterday, although I would suspect that Mitt Romney would have liked to have had a much better night than he did. But again, yes, John McCain is the front runner. No, the race is not over yet.
And again, we want to hear from listeners who voted yesterday or participated in caucuses or maybe worked the election. What was it like at your balloting spot at your caucus? Our numbers for Republicans and Independents, 800-344-3893. For Democrats and Independents, 800-344-3864. And the email address is talk@npr.org. Ken?
You know, one thing that also occurred to me is that for a lot of people in the states following Super Tuesday, they've been complaining for many weeks that they're not part of the excitement. Their votes don't matter. You know, Texas, Ohio, Maryland,
Pennsylvania,
exactly. But now, as it turned out, since it seems to be a fight for the Democratic to the finish for the Democratic nomination, these votes do matter. So the people who created the Super Tuesday thing, which seemed to be so haphazard and so, you know, unwieldy, yet it goes on. And so those states that are still to come do matter. And every, you know, back to the old thing, every vote counts and every delegate counts.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Gladys. Gladys calling us from Phoenix, Arizona on the Republican line.
Hi. I need to tell you what happened here in Phoenix yesterday. I went over to vote to beat the 5 o'clock rush. I went to my polling place and stayed in line for a half an hour. When I got inside the polling place, they said, "We're out of provisional ballot envelopes. And so I only have three more, so the rest of you will just have to wait. I've sent for some more, but it may be a while."
Hmm.
And they couldn't give us a time frame as to what a while was, but knowing how slow the process typically is, that could have been another hour. I didn't stay to vote because I couldn't. I had to be to an appointment in 45 minutes.
Well, we're going to count your vote right now, Gladys. Who would you have voted for?
I would have voted for Mitt Romney, and he didn't win here in Arizona. And I'm not the only person that left the polling place. I had them announce to the people standing in line that there were no more provisional ballots and that they'd have to wait. They would leave the polling place open for those in line till 7 o'clock. But we may have been in line another hour and a half before we got those ballots.
And I'm sure you and some other people remain upset about that.
Very upset because they didn't, I mean, why couldn't they have counted those envelopes earlier to know, gee, we're going to need these in another hour. We better call ahead and get these.
Well, we work in the news media, and arithmetic is beyond us a lot of the time, too.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Gladys. And let's go to the Democratic line, and this is Joanne. Joanne with us from Wichita in Kansas.
Hi.
Hi.
In Wichita, Kansas last night, we had freezing, blustery cold winds, sleet. It started to snow. We were down at the courthouse. Our state expected 15,000 statewide. There were over 32 to 35,000 that turned out statewide. We waited outside 40 to 50 minutes in a long line while they were trying to figure out what to do with everyone. And then once they got everyone inside, they ran out of all the forms to register. And I know for a fact, from just what I heard from other people that work in the caucus scene, there were over 1,000 that they had heard, you know, that they had counted so far that had left the Republican Party to come vote Democratic.
So it was in the intensity around the country, Joanne, was amazing. And I guess you're saying that's what it was like in Wichita. If people are willing to wait in the freezing rain to vote.
It was an amazing sight for real democracy to see that many people laughing, talking, and freezing. I mean, we were huddled together with another family. So It was fantastic. I'm just so happy today, and I think Kansas really could be a blue state this year. I hope so.
Thanks very much for the call, Joanne.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And when you're hearing stories like that, Ken, and those are not the only places where there were hitches or not enough envelopes or there were other problems, gremlins, but most of them caused by the phenomenal turnout.
From the moment the Iowans participated in the caucuses on January 3rd, I guess it was. It's been so long ago, although it's like a month ago. But the turnout on both parties, but especially on the Democratic side, has been record-breaking. It's just phenomenal. And it's so disappointing to hear that state election officials in subsequent states since Iowa and New Hampshire did not prepare for this onslaught of voters. You hear this is the story from Wichita is heartwarming in the sense that the enthusiasm was there, but the fact that many votes did not count, many people could not stay long enough until provisional ballots were they came up with it, that's disappointing.
Let's get Craig on the line. Craig calling us from Haley in Idaho.
Hey, yeah, we experienced some of the same things that I'm hearing on the show where, you know, everybody was inundated for our caucus. Only about 1,200 people made it in before basically it would have been a fire hazard to have any more people in our local auditorium. There was word the traffic was backed up through town, and they were trying to get voting slips out to the people waiting outside. It started snowing. It was cold. But it was amazing to see the range of ages people commenting on, you know, back in Kennedy, referring to Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy, also high school seniors who just turned 18, signing up to become delegates for the June 12th state
convention, I think it is, yes.
Convention that's going to happen here in Idaho, and just the fact that out of the 1,200 people in the auditorium that were voting, only about 160 went for Hillary Clinton, and that didn't even give her enough percentage to have a single delegate. So all of ours here in Blaine County looks like we'll go to Obama, which was pretty much the heartfelt in the auditorium that night, last night. It was amazing.
Well, thanks very much for that report. Ken?
You know, it was amazing. Don Gagne had a piece on NPR over the weekend. He was with the Obama campaign, and I think it was Boise, and there were thousands and thousands and thousands. And you think of, you know, Idaho, you don't think of it as a Democratic, as a Democratic stronghold, shall we say. Joanne, who called earlier from Wichita, said that she hopes that Kansas will be a blue state in November. Now, both Idaho and Kansas have not gone Democratic since Lyndon Johnson in 1964. But again, there was so much enthusiasm out there on both sides. But again, we're hearing it more and more from the Democrats. You wonder if something's going to change in November.
Craig, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking with NPR political editor Ken Rudin, and we want to hear from you as well. Republicans and Independents, 800-344-3893. Democrats and Independents, 800-344-3864. Email us, talk@npr.org. When we come back, we'll be talking with pollster Andy Kohut of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. Stay with us. It's a special report from NPR News.
Support for today's broadcast is provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 15 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of name-brand foods from around the world. Your suggestions and requests are always welcome. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And all 24 states held primary contests or presidential nominating contests yesterday. And the final tallies are just one part of the story. Thanks to exit poll data, we're learning more about exactly who came out to vote or caucus on Super Tuesday and what drove their decisions. We're also getting a better idea of just how many turned out. If you voted, caucused, or worked the election yesterday, call us. Describe what it looked and felt like, what other voters were saying and doing. Again, split lines Republicans can reach us at 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. Independents can call in on either line. And, of course, everyone can email the same address, talk@npr.org. NPR political editor Ken Rudin is with us. And joining us here in the studio is Andy Kohut, director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. And, Andy, I know you had a late night, too. We appreciate you coming in.
Happy to do it.
And the numbers of people who voted yesterday is just phenomenal.
I have a number for you with respect to that. It's 24%. 24% is the number of people who are satisfied with national conditions, much lower than in most national elections. And when we get surges in voting, it's not a consequence of a spike in civic engagement. It's a consequence of Americans being unhappy with the status quo. And that is certainly the case. And it's particularly the case among Democrats, and Democratic participation is, in fact, exceeding Republican participation.
Of the 25 million or so who voted yesterday, 14.7 million Democrats by an NPR count, total Republicans, and these are just in the states that had both Democratic and Republican primaries yesterday, 8.9 million.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to dismiss Republican participation. It's pretty intense in a lot of places. It's a real contest between these three candidates.
Here's an email from Kent in Oregon. Record turnouts in many, if not all, the primaries occurred yesterday. Was this the result of the one person not mentioned in any of the campaign speeches last night? George W. Bush. Even Mitt Romney in his speech last night was very specific in mentioning other Republican presidents, including George Herbert Walker Bush, but no mention of George W. How are the candidates handling the current president?
As little as possible, I think, is the answer on the Republican side, and as much as possible on the Democratic side. And I think a large part of the reason why there's so much energy here is because people have been so discontented with President Bush's second term. And continues to be a real problem for the Republicans among independent voters. But, you know, we'll see that play out in the general.
As you looked at the exit polls from yesterday, and as you've had a chance to sleep, if briefly, on some of the figures, what surprises you?
Well, one of the surprises was the role of Latinos in California. They were represented 30% of the Democratic electorate, a very big number, a little bigger than I think many pollsters expected. And they decisively went for Hillary Clinton. Blacks went overwhelmingly for Obama. I think the race was pretty even among whites, which is a pretty good showing for Obama because in the past he hasn't done so well among whites. But they certainly made the difference. They voted, according to the semifinal exit poll of California, 66 Latinos. This is 66 to 33 Clinton for Obama. But in other states, I think, as has been pointed out, New Mexico, the Latino vote split pretty evenly. In Connecticut, I think Obama, in fact, got a plurality of the Latino vote. But that was really a big surprise. But a lot of it wasn't so surprising. It was building on what we had seen, the patterns that we had seen: gender, race, age, ideology, social class, and political independence making a difference on the Democratic side. And yes, there were some variations from state to state, but this really did have the character of a national primary with these trends that we saw pretty much in most places.
On the Republican side, the divisions among the candidates are much sharper. You can draw distinct ideological divisions among them. Did that show up in the exit polls?
It did. I mean, it showed up in that in every one except Georgia, McCain won the vote of independents who consider themselves independents, even though they were voting sometimes in closed primaries. He also won the vote of moderates. And what happened in many places, Huckabee and Romney split the conservative vote, except in the South, where Huckabee had such a large share of the white evangelical Protestant vote.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it described almost as a denominational split. The Baptists have voted for Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the white evangelical Protestant vote, it's it was very strong for Huckabee, and where it's very large in the southern states, which are largely Baptist. So this could either be denominational or regional. But if you get up into look at the states in the north, where the numbers are smaller, Huckabee didn't really do that well among white evangelical Protestants. He did reasonably well, but didn't win them in many states.
Mm-hmm. And Ken Rudin, as we mentioned earlier, Mike Huckabee did pretty well yesterday and won in a lot of places. Nobody expected him necessarily to win. But as he looks ahead, haven't most of the places where he can expect to do well already voted?
Well, that's exactly right. Obviously, the states, his best states were always considered South Carolina, which he narrowly lost, and he won Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee. As we said, not much left in the South for him to pick and choose at, off. The next big Southern primary, of course, we have next week is Virginia, but that's less, I think, good for the kind of appeal that Huckabee is making. Texas is March 4th, which is quasi-Southern. It's more Western than anything. So I think it's very possible that Mike Huckabee's best days may be behind him. But look, he surprised us so far. We didn't expect him to win in many of the states he did carry yesterday. So who knows? But I would suspect that Mike Huckabee's best day may have been yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you some numbers from the Pew database. Among Republicans in Virginia, 43% of them are white evangelical Protestants, which is higher than the average 35%. Maryland is about 29%, which is to say lower. So Virginia might not be bad for Huckabee. But you're right, when you go on, when you go further, it's not going to look good for Huckabee because the numbers are going to get smaller. Let's say Wisconsin, 28%, and so on.
But here's one thing I was just thinking, too. If Mitt Romney finds that his $35, $40 million investment so far has not panned out, he feels that, why keep doing that? If I'm not going to win, I mean, he won Utah, he won Massachusetts, he won some Rocky Mountain states yesterday.
He won places where he lived.
Right.
Well, but I don't think he lived in Montana.
Well, yeah, that would be a beaut. But I'm saying if he decides, he says he'll go on to the convention. That's what he said yesterday. But we've heard John Edwards say he'll go on to the convention too. But if Mitt Romney pulls out, the demographics may not be there for Mike Huckabee, but if Mike Huckabee becomes the conservative alternative to John McCain, he could do better than a lot of us think.
Yes, because McCain, except in a few places, really didn't win a large majority among regular Republicans, and in most places didn't win a plurality among conservative voters. So yes, Huckabee or Romney could become the non-McCain if the other guy wasn't there.
Let's get another caller on the line and go to Bemidji, Minnesota, and Patricia's on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Minnesota went strongly for Romney last night, even though it was a straw poll. But even though our governor is John McCain's campaign chair, the supporters were not energized for McCain in Minnesota, and it might be because our governor should be focusing more attention on Minnesota's deficit instead of concerning himself with becoming a national candidate. It seemed like all Pawlenty could do on NPR last night on national radio was, after he found out McCain lost, he attacked the Republican base for not choosing his candidate. And do you think McCain can win in November, when it's very likely, if he pairs up with Pawlenty, he'll lose the states he won on New England coast last night in California?
Mm-hmm. A good question, Ken Rudin.
Well, I suspect that given the fact that John McCain's weaknesses in the party is among the conservative faction of the party, which is not more, is far more than a faction. It's actually the majority of the party. I think he has to go to the right for a running mate. I think Tim Pawlenty, while he is a clear McCain supporter, and a lot of people talk about him as a possible vice president, I suspect that McCain needs to go to the right to win over the conservatives who are hesitant about him. So I don't think it's Pawlenty. But also, same with Schwarzenegger in California. Even though McCain did win the state of California, Schwarzenegger has become more and more unpopular. His battles with the legislature over the budget has really hurt his approval ratings. So there's always a two-edged sword with endorsements. Whatever negatives that Pawlenty and, for example, Schwarzenegger may have, they could also bring down the candidate they're backing.
Yet, Andy Cohut, if you look at Massachusetts, a popular Democratic governor, Deval Patrick, and both the senior senators from Massachusetts, Ted Kennedy and John Kerry, endorsed Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton won that contest handily.
voters have a mind of their own. And she had a pretty big base of support for a good deal of time, and it didn't wear away. Now, it did wear away in some places. It wore away in California, and, 48% of the people in California, Democrats in California, said that Ted Kennedy endorsement was important to them, but not in all places.
Going back quickly to the woman from Minnesota, also, it seems like in caucus states on the Republican side, that the conservatives are more energized in caucus states, and that's why one of the reasons I suspect that Romney won in Minnesota. Had it been a primary, maybe McCain might have done better.
I think you see the same thing on the Democratic side, that Barack Obama does better in the caucus states because the liberals play a very important role, and ideology is quite a significant factor in both contests.
Let's get Leslie on the line, the Democratic line. She's calling from Oklahoma City.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I wanted to comment that I really feel that the voting system needs to be overhauled and we need to have a popular vote from the primaries on. I feel like my vote really didn't count as a Democrat that voted for Obama. And I knew before going in to vote that the numbers were favoring Hillary, and I knew that the polls said that in Oklahoma, Hillary had the advantage. I felt like I voted, but it really didn't mean anything in the big picture. And I've never really felt this way before until this election. I really, it's so important and so crucial that I just feel like I've been left out.
I wonder, Leslie, did you watch the returns last night?
I was at a rehearsal last night, so I was not able to. I was only able to flip NPR on about 10:30 and listen to it on the radio.
Well, I wonder, there was, for example, on the Republican side, where it was winner take all in the state of Missouri, for example, John McCain won a razor-thin victory in Missouri and gets all of that state's delegates. Would you prefer it to have been that way for Democrats in Oklahoma?
I would just prefer it to be the popular vote. I feel that I realize that we may still have lost, but I would feel that in the big picture, if you added up all the votes on both sides, it would be more even. I just feel that we need to reflect on a national basis what people want, and if we go state by state, I feel that it's more divisive. It divides us into us or them, rather than looking at the big picture.
Okay, Leslie, thanks very much for the call. And you have to admit, the words Byzantine and arcane have been used an awful lot in these last couple of days, Ken Rubin.
But, and the same argument holds true in November. I mean, what about a Republican in California or a Democrat in Texas? They will argue that their votes don't count because of the state's electoral votes go, even if somebody wins by 51-49, all the electoral votes except for Nebraska and Maine, they all go to the winner of the states. And so a lot of people are saying that perhaps the way to go is by popular vote. That is not going to happen, though.
NPR political editor Ken Rudin also with us. Andy Kohut, director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. You're listening to an NPR News special. And let's go back to the Republican line. And this is Doug. Doug with us from Lake Tahoe in California.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Just calling. I'd like to hear more coverage on for each candidate, like where their big money is coming from. Because I think that would influence. That has a lot of influence, and that would influence the common person of thinking, okay, if this big money's coming from this company, maybe I don't want to have anything to do with that candidate.
Mm-hmm. That was something that Barack Obama talked about in his speech last night, I guess sort of semi-victory speech last night. They both gave semi-victory speeches last night. Many of the candidates did. But Ken Rudin, the source of people's donations to candidates is public information, isn't it?
It is, but not everybody knows about it. I mean, you have to go digging for it. And I think Barack Obama has already said that, he won't take a special interest money. John Edwards' campaign for the longest time says he won't take lobbyist money. Hillary Clinton says that, whatever I take, it has nothing to do with the way I will vote. People support me from all walks of life. But I think now that the horse race aspect, not that the horse race aspect of the campaign has gone away, but I think we have more time, fewer candidates, more time to go into things like where they stand on key issues, where the money is coming from.
I also concerned about why there's an equal time for the candidates that aren't doing as well, because, the more coverage you give somebody, then that's more influence towards that person for the general public. And it's like, I look at somebody like Ron Paul, where he's 20, 30 million just from the common person over the internet. you never hear anything about the guy. And then, you know, that's what I say, the more coverage you give here, you guys just cover the top, no matter what news agency it is. They just cover the top runners. They don't, you know, you don't hear anything about the guys that aren't doing this. And if they got more coverage, there'd be more influence towards them. Unless the media itself says, hey, I don't want to cover this guy because if he wins, you know, that makes things worse for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, that's the way I see it through the whole picture.
All right, Doug, thanks very much for the call. Andy?
Well, there's no question that the coverage counts in terms of influencing people, but it's not only the coverage. For example, Mike Huckabee was getting almost no coverage in the fall and no registration in the polls, but he made his case to voters in a more effective way than Ron Paul did, and all of a sudden he started popping up in our polls and he started popping up in news coverage more. So it's tempting to think that it's only coverage, it's only what the polls show. But there's so many cases where you see a candidate coming from nowhere to say that it's not all one way.
Mm-hmm. And Andy, as the race, particularly on the Democratic side, now looks like a scramble for delegates anywhere in the country, what lessons do you take away? If a campaign manager called you today, what would you tell them?
I guess what I would tell them is that you've got a long tussle ahead because this is all proportional voting. It's not winner take all, and you know, we could see a very, very close race here on in, and each of these candidates have their strengths, and to the extent that they are successful, it means that they're pushing the female vote, for example, in terms of Hillary Clinton, or the black vote in terms of Obama, or the we want change vote in terms of Obama very hard. I don't think there are any magic solutions to this. I think it's just going to be a hard-fought campaign, almost delegate by delegate, because the Democratic system is not winner-take-all, and we're going to have a close race, and that's why we're going to keep going.
Andy Kohut, thanks very much for your time today. And again, we appreciate your rising out of your bed like Lazarus to come in and talk with us. Andy Kohut, thank director you. Of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, with us here in Studio 3A. Stay with us. We're going to be talking more about the Latino vote and about the youth vote, both of which turned out in surprising numbers yesterday. The number for Republicans and Independents, 800-344-3893. For Democrats and Independents, 800-344-3864. talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Ken Rudin will be back with us as well. You're listening to a special from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Vital Projects Fund, supporting the Museum of Modern Art, now exhibiting etchings by Lucian Freud. Details at moma.org. From Better Business Bureau, when businesses are accredited by BBB, they agree to standards of trust based on integrity and performance. More at bbb.org. And from Enterprise Florida and the Metro Orlando Economic Development Commission, putting imagination to work for companies large and small. OrlandoEDC.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
The woman known as the Dog Listener will be our guest next time on the Afternoon Magazine. Her name is Jan Fennell, and some years ago she began to think, when it came to training dogs, we could do better. She began thinking about how better to communicate with dogs. I'm Celeste Quinn. I'll welcome your phone calls for Jan Fennell, the Dog Listener, following the 1 o'clock news. The Afternoon Magazine begins at noon with news from NPR, the BBC, and AM 580. Here on AM 580, WILL Urbana.
This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are headlines from some of the stories we're following here today at NPR News. A series of deadly tornadoes swept across several southern states. Dozens of people were killed when the twisters moved through Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Arkansas on Tuesday before moving east to Alabama. And the National Institutes of Health is halting part of a major diabetes study after it found that very aggressive control of blood sugar levels was related to a higher risk of death. Patients who have type 2 diabetes will no longer receive intensive drug treatment to control blood sugar. You can hear details on those stories and much more, of course, coming up later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow in this hour, we'll talk about the political divide across the dining room table. Is there an ideological split in your family? That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking today about the results of Super Tuesday. Our guest is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. And with record turnout in many states, exit polls showed that young voters and Latinos made big showings yesterday and played significant roles in the final results. We'll talk more about that in a moment. We have two phone lines today, one for Republicans and one for Democrats. If you're an independent, you can call either line. The Republican line is 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893 for Republicans and independents. Democrats and independents can call 800-344-3864. Again, 800-344-3864. And everybody can send us email. That address is talk@npr.org. Joining us now is Luis Clemens. He's editor of CandidatoUSA.com, an online Latino newsletter covering Latino politics. He joins us from member station KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And nice to have you on the program today.
Happy to be here.
Also with us is Kelly Goff. She's the author of Party Crashing, How the Hip-Hop Generation Declared Political Independence. She joins us from our bureau in New York, and it's nice to speak with you.
Thanks so much for inviting me back.
And Luis, tell us what happened in California last night, where the Latino vote seemed to prove decisive for Senator Clinton.
Well, just shy of decisive, I would say. I mean, there was record Latino voter turnout. Latino voters represented 29% of those people who went to the primary in California yesterday. And they overwhelmingly voted for Hillary Clinton, 2-1. And it made a big chunk of the difference. But it didn't account for the entire margin of victory.
And yet we also saw that in where you are, New Mexico, the Latino vote split more or less 50-50.
Well, the exit polls indicated 56% support for Hillary Clinton. And New Mexico is an interesting state because it's the most heavily Hispanic state in terms of the percentage of voters, and it was the subject of a great deal of love by both candidates and by high-profile surrogates.
And we should, of course, remind listeners, we speak of the Latino vote. The Latino vote is not homogeneous. It is very different from state to state. Certainly in Florida, you have a lot of Cubans, for example. In New York, Dominicans and Puerto Ricans, different from the Mexicans in places like New Mexico and California.
Well, I'm sure, in fact, that it would be wrong to speak of a Latino voting bloc. You can talk about a Latino voting group with some tendencies. But what we saw in terms of results yesterday, the difference between the New York Latino vote strongly, overwhelmingly in favor, 73% in favor for Hillary Clinton, and then neighboring state, Connecticut, where Obama won a majority of the Latino vote.
And again, the Latinos in those two states are not terribly different from each other. Kelly Goff, let me turn to you. Record numbers of young people voted yesterday. Every 4 years, it seems, that we continue to hear this is going to be the time when, well, the 18-year-old vote is
That's
going
right.
to make a difference. Well, this, at least in the primary season, it does seem to be coming true.
Well, you know, I've said this so many times that I'm beginning to sound a bit like a broken record. But one of the things I said early on before we started seeing this turnout in the contest is that people always say, you know, we hear this every 4 years and then they never show up. And, you know, I've always made the distinction that it's not that young people don't like voting. They like feeling inspired to vote, not simply voting between a lesser of two evils, which is often how, you know, by the time we get to the general election, it tends to be presented to us, right? Like, well, he's better than the other guy. And a lot of young people don't want to be forced with those options. They think that democracy should be a little better than that. And so this election cycle, we have a couple of candidates that seem to really be inspiring them. One in particular, as you know, Barack Obama, has really done well in large part on the strength of the youth vote. In fact, in Iowa, they were very instrumental in his win there.
And a lot of people said if you could analyze the Democratic vote in a lot of different ways, one way would be to say, well, by class, Hillary Clinton got most of the people who made under $50,000 a year. Barack Obama got most of the votes of those who made more than that. And also, by age, Hillary Clinton, older voters broke heavily for Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary, younger voters heavily for Barack Obama.
Well, you know, Neil, someone said something really interesting to me the other day, and this is, I have to say, for the record, I'm not going to say his name on air because he hasn't given me permission to do so, but he's a registered independent from New Jersey. So I often go to him to sort of, he's sort of like my political thermometer because, you know, I figure he's an independent voter from a state that's become increasingly more of a swing state. And so he's a great gauge for sort of what he feels about candidates. And what he said to me is that, you know, he said, I think Barack Obama's, and I should add also that he's 47. He said, I think Barack Obama's interesting. And he goes, but he's going to have to work on finessing that whole change message he keeps mentioning. Because, you know, older people like my father-in-law hear the word change and they think, I'm not really sure what that is exactly, but I know I don't like it. So I'm going to need a little bit more to work with on that. I thought that was a really interesting analysis of things. And it really sort of fit with some of the other conversations that I have had, even in my own family, with people who are over the age of 50, over the age of 60, which are the voters in which Hillary Clinton has tended to do better with.
Here's an email we got from Angie in Roseville, California. I live in Placer County, California, and in the short time I was at our polling station, I noticed something amazing. For the first time ever, I encountered independents, Republicans, and Democrats, and also represented were different age groups, a couple of 20-somethings, a couple of 40-somethings like myself, and a couple of seniors. It was remarkable and inspiring, and again, Ken Rudin, part of the extraordinary turnout yesterday.
Yes, and actually, I was listening to Kelly just now talk about this something, and I was just wondering if I could ask you a question quickly. We do know, as Neil just said, the exit poll did show that more older voters went gravitated to Hillary Clinton, younger voters for Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton will be 61 years old next year. She would be the oldest Democratic nominee since Harry Truman in 1948. John McCain is 71 years old. He would be the oldest president first elected ever. We talk about all the young people inspired by Barack Obama this time. Well, what are the chances of an inspired young voter participation in November if it's Hillary Clinton versus John McCain?
Well, I hate to be a huge pessimist here, but I think that the reality is that it's not nearly as likely as it would be if perhaps he were the nominee. And the reason I say that is, you know, it's interesting. In August, I don't know if you all will recall this, but there was this moment reported upon by the Associated Press in which Barack Obama was trying to convince an undecided Democratic voter why they should support him. And I think that the person's hesitation was due in part to the fact that he's African-American. They didn't know if that was would make him a viable candidate. And he actually said to this voter, I guarantee you that if I'm the nominee, African-American participation goes up by 30% and youth involvement goes up by 30%. At the time, that sounded wacky because this was back in August and everyone was basing it on historically that hasn't been the case. And then he proved it in Iowa. So I don't know that that's something that's transferable. And I think that he actually was perhaps not too far off the mark when he predicted that his candidacy could definitely mobilize that. I don't know that that's something we could consider transferable.
Luis Clements, did that generational split show up in the Latino vote?
Interestingly not, or rather it broke in a different way. If you look at Latinos 18 to 29 in California, 67% of them voted for Clinton as opposed to 32% for Obama. So at least when it comes to young Latinos in the state of California, they are supporting Hillary 2-1.
Let's get another caller on the line. We'll go to the Democratic line, and Erica is with us from St. Louis in Missouri. Erica, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for accepting my call today. I am 37, and I'm going to tell you I've been voting ever since I was 18, and I was more excited to vote yesterday than I've ever been, and I think Barack is going to take it. He represents America, and that's why he has such a diverse population of people that are supporting him, and I do think that he's going to take it all the way and become our candidate.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Erica. And when you said, did you see that excitement amongst other people at your polling station? I think she's left us for more excitement. Anyway, Ken Rudin, again, Missouri, a razor-thin victory, if it is a victory, for Barack Obama
right.
In the Democratic side.
And such a crucial state. You know, in the last 100 years, only 1956, as you well remember, Neil, when the state voted for Adlai Stevenson, aside from 56, Missouri has been right on every presidential election in the last century, at least. So it's obviously a very, very crucial state and a very close state. The fact is, the fact that we thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win it, Barack Obama seemed to pull ahead in the end. That's the kind of way the state goes. It's very, very close, evenly matched, rural in the middle, the two cities on the outside, Kansas City and St. Louis, a key state, a bellwether state to watch.
Can I jump in and ask Ken a question really quickly?
Go ahead, Kelly Goff.
I was going to ask, looking at those numbers, because it wasn't it that Clinton won a majority of the rural areas, and then Obama took some of the largely black population like St. Louis, but also weren't there a bunch of colleges in some of those cities that he took?
There were, and we've seen all along that he has done very well with the college vote and the youth vote, and the question is whether, and we've talked about this before, whether that same enthusiasm would come out, would exist in November if mm-hmm. he were not the nominee.
And let me ask Louise Clemens, as you look ahead, maybe we shouldn't do that, but as we look ahead, John McCain, the co-sponsor of immigration reform legislation, would that, do you think, cut much ice with Latino voters?
Well, clearly in the state of Florida, in the Republican primary, it was not that long ago, although it feels like it, McCain won in large measure, although not exclusively, because of the support of Latino Republicans. I think as far as the Latino vote is concerned, McCain is a particularly dangerous candidate for any Democratic opponent. He enjoys a broad reservoir of support among Latinos. He's had more than 70% Latino support in his Senate elections in Arizona.
We're talking with Louise Clemens, editor of CandidatoUSA.com, with Kelly Goff, a political commentator and author of the forthcoming book, Party Crashing, How the Hip-Hop Generation Declared Political Independence, and with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and author of the Political Junkie column you can read every week at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to a special from NPR News. Let's get Bill on the line. Bill calling an independent on the line. Oh, excuse me, Highland, Indiana.
One comment and then a question. It's delightful as an Indiana voter to realize that come May, our primary votes are actually going to matter in the electoral process. But my question regards the Michigan and Florida electors or representatives to the convention. What's the chance that those will be brought back into play by way of backdoor dealings at the respective conventions? And I'll take my answer off the air.
And thanks for the call, Bill. Just to remind listeners, the Republican and Democratic primaries were moved up ahead of schedule against the rules of both parties, and the Republicans decreed that half their delegates would be stripped, and the Democrats decreed that all of their delegates would be stripped. And, well, Ken Rudin, what do you think?
Well, as it stands right now, certainly on the Democratic side, neither the Michigan nor the Florida delegates are recognized. Right now, they don't have any delegates at all. It's hard to imagine that in two crucial states that these delegates ultimately will not be seated. And I think it'll be up to the Democratic nominee, whoever he or she will be, to decide about that. But it's interesting because right now, the way it is, it looks like the needed number of delegates to win the Democratic nomination may not include Florida and Michigan. Hillary Clinton has made the case that, look, these are they're real people too, and they should have a say. And so that could be a very interesting convention fight if the fight for the nomination goes that far.
Louise Clemens, you're ordinarily based. You're joining us today from New Mexico, but ordinarily based in Florida. What do you think is going to happen?
I can't imagine that the Florida Democratic delegates will be seated. Then again, I couldn't have imagined any number of things in this race, so who knows?
Okay. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line and go to Heather. Heather with us from Minneapolis on the Democratic line.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Heather.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I caucused last night for the first time. It was very exciting. And I chose to participate by being a teller. I was one of the six people counting our ballots. But a number of people have been calling in expressing their frustration, and despite the fact that we did have record turnout for our polls, we were some of the people in Minnesota who were our last balloters, were balloting on scraps of paper, and we were struggling to read some handwriting. Everybody who got to the poll in a timely fashion was able to ballot, and our particular poll group held business for the caucus until everyone was able to sit down and participate who wanted to.
Sounds like it was an exciting day.
Yeah, and it was very nice to see that even under duress conditions, the system could work and could work well.
Thanks very much for the call, Heather.
Thank
Congratulations.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Here's an email we have from Michael in San Francisco. Do you have the total number of Democratic votes by person nationally? This we do have from the Associated Press, or at least it was an approximation a while ago. It may have been updated since then. But Senator Clinton got 7,280,733 votes. Senator Obama, 7,201,000. 317 votes on the Republican side. John McCain got 3,600,684 votes. Governor Romney, 2,945,832 votes. Governor Huckabee, 1,788,217. And Ron Paul, Congressman Paul, 392,293.
And go back to the percentages there, especially on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton, 48.24%. Barack Obama, 47.71%. It was a Super Tuesday, but not super for either candidate because it's really, just dead even.
Almost 15 million ballots cast on the Democratic side, and they're divided by, what, less than 80,000 votes.
Remarkable.
Incredibly close. Let's see if we can turn now to Louise Clemens. And as we saw, the Latino vote was very different in different states. Is this something that's going to be a factor, do you think, in the Democratic side, that Senator Obama is going to be able to make inroads in places like Texas, for example, that's coming up?
Well, Texas is the last great stop in terms of the primary race for Latino voters. Fully 1 in 4 voters in Texas are Latino, and it's his last chance to make a huge to recover some ground with Latino voters. And I think we're seeing differences between neighboring states of similar Latino populations that I've never seen before. I really can't explain the difference between the Latino vote in New York and New Jersey and the Latino vote in Connecticut, even though it's very similar makeup of the Latino population. I really feel like I should start consulting the National Enquirer astrologers to try and figure out what's going to happen next.
Ken Rudin?
Luis, you mentioned earlier that John McCain could be more dangerous to the Democrats than other Republicans. Would it be in John McCain's best interest to make that point that given the fact that Latino voters are the fastest growing bloc in the country, that he would be able to get a bigger percentage? Or do you suspect that that might anger Republican conservatives who feel that illegal immigration and the word amnesty is a more important issue?
I think the Karl Rove school of arguing that Latino voters are important is dead and buried for at least a few years. And when you consider that the McCain campaign didn't even post its Spanish language radio ad that it ran in Florida on its website, has tried to keep talk about its Hispanic outreach director to a minimum, they're really trying to lower all that talk regarding Latino voters.
Luis Clemens, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Luis Clemens, editor of CandidatoUSA.com, an online newsletter covering Latino politics. We'd also like to thank Kelly Goff. She joined us from New York. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Kelly Goff's forthcoming book, Party Crashing, How the Hip-Hop Generation Declared Political Independence, and NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin. Thank you.
Thanks, Neil.
I'm Neil Conan. You've been listening to an NPR News special.
Support for NPR comes from The Pajamagram Company, offering women's pajamas delivered overnight and on Valentine's Day in a gift hat box at pajamagram.com. From Civic Ventures, presenting the Purpose Prize to Americans over 60 who invent ways to solve tough social problems. Nominations at purposeprize.org. And from Vermont Teddy Bear, offering personalized handmade bears delivered overnight and on Valentine's Day to home or office at vermontteddybear.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And this is NPR member station WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Our technical director this afternoon is Henry Frayne, and the producer for the afternoon magazine is Harriet Williamson. Coming up, we'll have news from National Public Radio. Then Todd Gleason will be in with the closing market report, and he'll have all the settlement prices for us this afternoon from the Boards of Trade and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, a flood warning is in effect for Champaign and Vermilion counties until 3 p.m., for Douglas County until 6:45 p.m., and for Logan County until 11:45 p.m. A flood warning for small streams is in effect for Ford and Iroquois counties until 7:30 tomorrow morning, and a winter weather advisory is in effect for Livingston County until 6 p.m. For the two states, a winter storm warning is in effect for northern Illinois, portions of west central Illinois, and extreme northwestern Indiana until 6 p.m. The warning includes Chicago, Rockford, the Quad Cities, Macomb, and all of I-80 in Illinois. Winter weather advisory in effect for portions of central Illinois, including Galesburg, Peoria, and Pontiac, until 6 p.m., and for portions of northwestern and north central Indiana until 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Let's look at Ed Kieser's forecast now for the two states. This afternoon in north central Illinois, cloudy with snow, heavy at times with snowfall of 6 to 14 inches. In northern Indiana, cloudy with a wintry mix changing to snow, with several inches of snow possible in some areas. In central Illinois, cloudy and windy with areas of light snow, flurries, and drizzle. In central Indiana and the south, cloudy with a few scattered showers. Highs ranging from 28 in northwestern Illinois to 62 in southeastern Indiana. Tonight in Illinois, cloudy with snow showers and flurries during the evening hours. In Indiana, cloudy with scattered snow showers. Lows ranging from 13 in northwestern Illinois to 28 in southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with scattered flurries during the afternoon. Highs ranging from 25 in northwestern Illinois to 45 in the far south. Up next, it's news from NPR. Stay tuned.